Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, senior editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guest is Shreyas Becker, head of AI and data products in manufacturing and supply at Sanofi. Shreyas joins us on today's podcast to talk about alleviating pain points for supply chain leaders in life sciences spaces, from building systems that deliver quote-unquote real-world evidence to the subject matter experts and managers who need it most, to the pros and cons of sharing sensorial data with big tech data storage platforms like Amazon Web Services. Shreyas helps the executive podcast audience understand how problems are both viewed and solved through the lens of data from no matter where else they arise in the enterprise. Without further ado, here's our conversation. Shreyas, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure having you.
Thanks, Matthew. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Great to be talking to someone from Sanofi for the first time. Really great to be talking about also the cross-section between life sciences, manufacturing, the supply chain, just a lot of areas that touch a lot of different industries that we love talking about. So let's just start big picture here. Where are you seeing the biggest pain points for life sciences leaders at your crux of what I just described, supply chains, manufacturing, especially when it comes to driving supply chain efficiencies?
There are many problems across the value chain, but the biggest ones, you know, especially for most pharma companies, comes down to the way they make these drugs. There are many, many different ways of making drugs. One of the ways of making drugs, which is very prominent across different companies, is called using biomanufacturing way of making drugs. What biomanufacturing in a nutshell means is that you have live organisms actually helping you produce these drugs. Back in chemistry, you know, when we were in school taking chemistry classes, making things sounded like a very simple equation. You add, you know, like 5 kilos of this, 6 kilos of that, and you end up with 11 kilos of your final product. Unfortunately, that's not the way it happens when you think of making bioproducts. So, you know, there are many, many cases across companies where you sometimes might end up with just 5 kilos of output, and you might run the exact same thing, and then sometimes might end up with like 20 kilograms of the output. So trying to first understand how much you make and like building predictability and reliability around how much you make is super critical for most of the biomanufacturing companies out there.
Very, very interesting stuff. Now, like any good researcher, I'm 5 miles wide and 1 inch deep across all of these industries. Probably the closest area of my life that I have close to bio manufacturing is I'm a big kombucha drinker. So, yep. Yes, but that's a bioproduct, right? It is essentially just bacteria that you're drinking to help your intestines. Just in there, maybe if we could, what are some of the considerations that you'd have for biomanufacturing that you just would not for you know, plain old, you know, just making the pills for lack of a better way of putting it?
I like your kombucha example. I like to use
thank
something,
you. I felt enormously insecure and ignorant putting that out there, and I was going for it. Thank you.
No, I really like it. So I don't understand how to make a kombucha, but I know how to bake a bread. You know, at least.
Yeah, essentially the same thing, right?
Yeah.
We love metaphors, analogies on this show. It's the only way we can get it across.
So maybe I'll use the bread metaphor a little bit.
Sure.
Right? Imagine you're trying to make a bread. Okay, like not every farmer is going to give you the same type of wheat. You know, we have that problem too. Not every store is going to sell you the same type of yeast. You know, there's always like these tiers of wheat, tiers of yeast, and so on and so forth, like food grade. Those classifications exist, but within those classifications, there are these minute differences that are very, very hard to measure. The thing that also changes is your tap water. You're going to use the same city to provide your water, but they're not going to provide the water with the exact same amount of dissolved minerals and all of those things every time they give you the material. And your home temperature varies every single day. Air pressure varies every single day. All of this means you end up with more dough on some cases and less dough on some cases, and your dough might taste different. You might do the exact same things. You might have it down to a perfect recipe, be. But maybe you got a different egg this time. Who knows? Maybe the egg was 3 days older than the last time you used it. Like, you never measured how old the egg was. So we have those exact same problems, but we just have it at a much larger scale. The way we try to solve it is we try to put as many sensors around it as we can, try to measure as many things as we can, and then feed it all through big, beautiful AI programs to like help us first understand what's going on. But, you know, the variations continue to exist, and that is why we have this problem. And we try to like standardize as much as we can. But, you know, that's a battle that not just Sanofi, but pretty much anyone in this phase, in the space, is like kind of like waging, right? Like, and it's not just for like biomanufacturing of pharmaceuticals, but these days people are talking about biomanufacturing clothes. People are talking about biomanufacturing fuels. All of these companies are going to have similar type of challenges.
Absolutely. And feel free to lean into that. I think bread's even better because everybody eats bread and only jerks like me use kombucha. Anyway, but yeah, so sticking with bread, and we can just get into the brass tacks of the actual process in a fair amount of the jargon, because I think we've got a lot of listeners in the industry on the show, and I'll let you know if we get lost from the outside. But I'd say even with that premise, the scale, everything you were bringing up in terms of AI, I'm wondering from there. Now, we know from manufacturing that, you know, problems like predictive maintenance, or at least use cases in that regard, will always rely on, you know, certain metrics going on in the factory floor that are essential to know, you know, when's this going to show up. And I think, really leaving the bread metaphor now, everybody at home, my mom, hi mom, listening to the show right now, is maybe probably familiar with the media coverage of, say, the COVID-19 vaccine, that there are serious considerations in terms of transportation, making sure those vaccines are still viable. And they could probably safely assume a few of those considerations for biomanufacturing as we've described it. With that backdrop, I'm wondering what at that point, especially for biomanufacturing, what metrics become important that you're measuring and you're deploying those data tools are, and what strategies are you deploying to really think about those metrics in context to drive those efficiencies?
Yeah, great question. The number one most important metric is quality. You are putting these things into, like, if it's a vaccine, you're putting it into a healthy person. So it's got to be very good quality. And when you think of quality itself, there are like many kind of KPIs that kind of branch into quality, so to speak. You know, you have to look at toxicity, you have to look at, you know, like how good the compound is that is being used to treat a specific disease. So that's I would say is the number one primary metric. The second thing that we are usually kind of interested in is a metric called yield. There are yield basically is just like the output by the input. So it's like you create 20 kilograms by putting in 40 kilograms, then your yield is 50%. So that's basically yield. So they are the two most critical metrics that I have seen most people in this business be very, very interested in. There are a few other metrics called titer, for instance, which is how much active ingredient there is and all of those kinds of things. Like, but they are more kind of focused in like the much more upstream part of the process. Mm-hmm. When you break it down into process, there are like hundreds of different metrics. You care about optical density, for instance. You care about so many different properties, but I would imagine they are like very, very specific per process. But at an overall high level, anything that a human being or, you know, in some cases even animals are taking in, quality is the number one thing. And the next thing is like more inward looking for a company, like, hey, can I make this profitably? Mm-hmm. And that's where yield comes in. So I would say those are the two most critical metrics that most people on a manufacturing line would be very, very interested about.
Absolutely. I'll say you're stealing my future questions, because you're also explaining how you're strategizing with them. So we get to a point in this kind of like general format to the show where we really get to have a lot of fun. I'll even put kind of a disclaimer on this of, you know, no one wants to predict what's going to happen next in AI, not by 3 weeks, not by 2 minutes, not by 10 years. So with that auspices, let's put that disclaimer there and maybe have some fun. What, you know, given that backdrop of, you know, how you're seeing, you know, just that basic backdrop of these are the metrics, these are the problems, we're seeing this throughout the industry. What can't you help but notice about kind of the trajectory of measuring things in this way, driving efficiencies in this way across the industry? And how do you think that might change life sciences in manufacturing and driving supply chain gain efficiencies going forward in this industry?
Yeah, obviously AI is going to play a very huge role. It's already playing a huge role in many things. Most companies that we speak to, or most companies, or like where my friends work at, or like where I'm working at right now, there is a huge, I would say, excitement around AI. The excitement is real in all cases. The value is not clear and real in most cases. And you need to kind of have a very, very strong focus point of view to drive value. And you see that, you know, across like many places as well. There are very specific places where we have kind of like made a choice to like go try use AI. Most obvious places where AI makes a huge impact is like just empowering the people on the floor. This could be like, hey, like, you know, I'm running a process. Give me better insights, or tell me what to do next so that I could run my process better. You know, that kind of like very prescriptive thing is one way that we are seeing AI help people. The other way that we see AI help people is people are like, hey, I'm in this very, very regulated process. I have like billions of hours spent on paperwork. Can you help me automate some of my paperwork? With this generative AI thing, people are like, can you write this? Can you write that? So we are looking at a lot of those types of levers as well. And it's not special to like Sanofi or anything. Like you see that at multiple places where they're using generative AI to like reduce the amount of, let's say, like administrative burden on people. That's a huge productivity boost for a lot of employees. So you see a lot of that happen as well. And in some more advanced companies, some of the other things that we are starting to see is AI directly make decisions on the machines itself. I don't know how much it's done in biomanufacturing perspective today, but you know, when you think of a chip manufacturer, or when you think of like computer chip manufacturer, you know, that makes a lot more sense, because like you have this new paradigm of like edge computing that's starting to be adopted at a much wider scale. So what you're seeing is that instead of like collecting all the data from like trillions of places and then putting it into your databases and running algorithms on top, what people are starting to do is build tiny AI in their machines and then find a way to ship those AI into the places where things are actually done. So like, you know, imagine like your phone today is like much better than a computer was 5 years back, or maybe 10 years back. So you could run these types of AI algorithms on the devices. So we are seeing a lot of that also start taking shape in very focused ways. So you see a lot of those kinds of things that create real value. With AI, where we do see AI kind of fail usually is, you know, when they are like loose experiments, not really tried to a strategic goal, unclear ownership, or poor data maintenance that's going on in behind the scenes. You know, those instances, which unfortunately are like a lot of instances, because people are just excited to do different things with AI. So, you know, we see those gaps kind of creeping.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Something that intrigues me here. We became aware of a use case a while back about how there's a huge opportunity in Gen AI to really streamline the labeling process. And then you can even build the marketing process on top of this in terms of extracting data from for labeling, specifically prescriptions. That was the use case. Really just kind of building a better, you know, connective tissue with data, basically between the communications departments, marketing, and the supply chain folks, for the ends of making sure that both the safety label, the safety labels, etc., were completely on point, and that was completely congruent with all the marketing information as well. Just curious, you seen that out there?
Yes, I have seen something very similar. But those are not like my direct areas of expertise.
Yeah, so I get you.
I won't be able to comment, but yes, I've seen people doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to make that another episode. But yes. Even better to know that's out there. Maybe perhaps a marketing agnostic question that I can just kind of ask, maybe in that regard, or even if not even quite Sanofi specific question I can ask in that regard. If you're already seeing it, are you finding any challenges in terms of like balancing your own momentum for your department and those silos coming down? And that can be anything, right? You know, with AI. So that's really not specific to marketing. But any insight you just have on just balancing those considerations as those silos come down, the walls come down between the departments with data, and keeping your own momentum up?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I could think of two things. One from very
Sure.
early in my career. I used to be a sales guy, and my
Me
job
too.
was basically going to LinkedIn and emailing people. Hey, I have a
Yeah.
cool product. Do you want to buy? A few years into my career, and a sales loft came around, which reduced 80%, 90%, or like some people use outreach, which just keeps following up across LinkedIn, across
Yep.
all the various channels on emails. Now people are experimenting with like new products. Like I've seen something like Lavender. Like I'm not trying to sell all the SDR tools out there,
Sure.
but people are trying to use AI to write these kind of introductory emails. But with Gen AI, it's taken a giant leap because as a sales guy, you are always dependent on, let's say, marketers to produce content for you, which you could go give it to these people. But now if I, as a sales guy or a salesperson, understood exactly what was needed, I could now go start telling Gen AI, this is exactly what I need. Can you create me a deck in the format that of my company? So I see this is a much simpler example that a lot of people could understand, like how sales and marketing are like kind of like the gap between the sales and marketing is
Yeah.
reducing because of Gen AI. We see a very similar kind of role happening between people who are responsible for maintaining these big sites, people who are responsible for communicating it to like other stakeholders, people who are responsible for talking about quality at every stage of the process, people who are responsible for validation. Typically what was happening was all of these groups had like different objectives that they were all trying to drive towards. But and they because of the objectives are different, the words or the choice of words that they were using was very, very different. But now you have this beautiful machine that not only understands your word, but also like every other
Yeah.
choice of word. So you when you start to now collaborate, when you start to collaborate on be it like writing documents or being writing engineering specifications, all of a sudden, like, you have these specific templates that start getting filled on their own. And all you have to do is like various departments come in and go like, oh, this makes sense. This makes sense. Maybe I'll edit it a little bit here. I'll edit it a little bit there. So you end up with like a single place that could produce everything from your engineering specification documents to like a maintenance schedule. So this it's like this is probably like a super AI kind of Gen AI
Yeah.
phenomenon. But I wouldn't say it's like maybe it's not like something that's 5 years or 10 years away. It's probably 3 months away or 4 months away. That's the
Wow.
speed at which the change is happening because now you have all the data, you have all the words, you have all the people all working on the same thing. So it's happening across many industries, and everybody wants to jump onto this train, right? Like, and
Yeah.
so the excitement is there, and you see this happening very, very quickly.
Well, I might not be able to speak for Emerge in this regard because Dan learns stuff all the time. Dan, our CEO, head of research, learns stuff all the time in phone calls before I get to get a chance to catch up with him. But this is the first time I'm really hearing this. And sometimes when I have to do some fishing expedition questions when we have some extra time in these episodes, I don't think it's gonna work out that well. But that's the best it's ever worked out. Shreyas, some really incredible insight here. Thank you so much for being with us on the program this week.
Perfect. Thank you, Matthew. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up today's show, I'd like to announce, if you haven't heard about this already, the newest addition to the Emerge podcast family. That is a new program called the AI in Healthcare and Life Sciences Podcast. That's actually where you'll be hearing Shreyas next on our platform. The second episode in this series, titled Winning Buy-in for Life Sciences Manufacturing and Supply Chain Management with Shreyas Becker of Sanofi, will air July 4th, just in time for the American holiday on that podcast platform. To find it, you can find it via Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Right now, nothing's stopping you, but if you need a URL, I don't blame you. You'll be able to find it at emerge.com/AI-in-healthcare-life-sciences-podcast. Maybe put a slash after there just for good measure. I am reading this off the teleprompter. On behalf of Daniel Fajella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI and Business Podcast.